Welcome to Season 1, Episode 4 of The Trekkies Are Talking. This week we talk about the Borg Queen. We started off the episode talking a little bit about the new movie Spaceman, which we will devote a whole episode to. And this week we talked about the Borg Queen. We watched First Contact so that we could talk about the Borg Queen. We talked about the Queen and we talked about a little bit about the origin of the Queen and the origins of the Borg. It's a very interesting episode. Just stay tuned and I hope you enjoy it.
Okay. So the director purposely put it in so it works. If he's hallucinating the spider, or if the spider is real.
Interesting. Yeah, because I kept asking myself that question. I just couldn't tell.
Mm-hmm. And you don't know, right? It's kind of like a little bit with Inception. Like sometimes you don't know, like when he spins the thing, like is right. That like whatever, right? And you're not meant to know. Like I read about that and you're meant to question, right?
Right.
So like I think it's a similar thing, but like I feel like that's kind of like a spiritual lesson because we're talking about Spaceman, just because I just pushed record in the middle of this conversation, but it's important because like you don't know. Like there is no like, okay, like there's no narrator like in behind you being like, okay, this is like how you're supposed to like live this moment. Right.
Right.
Like you don't actually know. So like sometimes you're like, okay, like what's real? Like, so I don't know. I think those kinds of movies are really interesting because they really like are like heavy duty. Like this is how we relate to ourselves and each other and stuff. Right. I don't know. I thought it was really clever and I loved like floating through the thing, the cloud, what is it called? The Chopra cloud and like
Chopra.
Yeah. And yeah. I loved how like we're probably supposed to have a whole episode about this, but whatever. I loved how like the spider is dying and he's like also like letting like go of something because he's had this whole like self-examination of how like he just kept leaving.
Right.
You know, like, and she just got tired of being left. And like, sometimes there's a dynamic between husband and wife. The guy goes off to do a thing. And sometimes some men are like, not, you don't know how to connect. And the more we reach, the more like you go away. Right. I mean, it's almost like a thing. Right. And so I don't know. It was really well done. Like, I just felt like really like, oh, like it was so.
Well, they gave you enough of their relationship, you know, kind of in clips that you started to get a feel for what was going on. You know, you sort of, you know, they had all that kind of alienation. It was, you know.
And I loved how they physically portray the alienation.
Yes.
Like, that is the ultimate, being at the, like, the edge of the flipping universe by yourself with a primordial spider who's dying. Like that's like, you know,
that's pretty
deep. Like, I just thought that was a really well done. I mixed reviews.
And anything with Isabella Rossellini is great.
Oh my God. I'm in love with her. I love her voice.
She was incredible. She's just like, when it comes to like playing like borderline evil, she's really good.
She could just read me a story any day. I just am in love with her. She's got a bit of her mom in her, you know, there.
Yes.
You know.
Oh yeah, for sure. More than a little bit.
But I just thought we'll probably have a whole episode about that. But I just thought, that whole, like, I loved the end, the floating through, you know, where they're each like letting go of something. Right.
Yeah.
So, and then like, you know, the spider's dying and he's like, you know, sort of like his old self is dying and his, you know, thing is, his journey has come to an end, but then like something new is beginning. Right.
Yeah.
So
I think for me, I think the most profound thing about the film was how I felt after the film.
Yes.
Hmm.
And I felt like I'd been through an event.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't get that from many films.
Yeah.
It really touched me in a way. Yeah. Like it really evoked some feelings. Yeah. Like, you know, I usually hate everything. I don't usually, or I can figure it out in the first 5 minutes and it's boring, but this was really something.
She's terrible with films.
Really?
She'll start watching a film and she'll go,
this is dumb. I hate this.
if this happens, I'm going to stop watching this. And then it happens.
And then I get all mad.
And then she gets angry.
But then I can't help myself.
What a stupid film. Why are they doing this?
So we watched First Contact, Star Trek First Contact.
Yes, we did.
So what do you guys think?
Had a bigger budget.
Bigger budget. 1996 was a long time ago, dude. Like, wow.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things you actually mentioned to me, that this was like 20 years old. And I honestly, like,
it's been 20 years since I've seen it. It's older than that. Like, yeah.
Wow. It's, yeah. Yeah, it was pretty interesting. I mean, the character of the character of the queen, I forgot like how awesome she was. Mm-hmm. I mean, just that sort of slimy, that slimy, snaky sort of, you know, she has a kind of primordial evil quality to her. You know, mm-hmm. She's like a combination of the snake meets Eve. You know,
she's like the evil villainess, you know, like, you know, yes. In the old Disney, they always had like the archetype, right? She's like that. Mm-hmm. If you want to talk about it like that. Like,
right.
That
kind of Cruella de Vil.
Yeah. Or Maleficent, you know, the evil.
Maleficent,
yeah, right. The other one. And
she has the quality that the best villains have, which is to be polite.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's almost right.
Yeah, there's nothing more unsettling than a polite.
Yeah, it's like they're being really nice to you when they're killing you. Like, wow.
Right.
Like, even if you've ever, like, you know, if you've ever been in like a sketchy situation with a human and they're doing that, it's really.
Yes. Like, I've been in many sketchy situations with the humans, and then
like
at the
like, or you know, like, you know, obviously, like me being a female, like, dude is like doing some shit to you, and he's being really nice to you and stuff, and it's like,
yeah,
really no. Yeah. So yeah, so
the best line in the film, I have for me, there's one best line in the film.
What's that?
Where she says to him, "Was it good for you?" That just blew me away. It was a really strange, you know, moment for humor, I thought, but I thought it was like very cleverly done.
Yeah, like there was a bit of wit sometimes in there, like, you know, with the way she was and that.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, I found it interesting how she thought, like, Data was going to be her, you know, because she took Data first or something, right? To be her.
Well, she's reversing. Yeah. It's weird because she's reversing the normal process.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But not really, because, so, I kind of listened more closely to the Borg mission statement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's we're going to what's the word again? My brain just went dead.
Assimilate
your biological and technological distinctiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the line, is biological and technological distinctiveness into our collective. And that's, so normally they're taking along mostly biological distinctiveness, right? They're sort of assimilating all these biological creatures.
Mm-hmm.
But now with Data, it's like pure technology. But what does she do? She reverses it, and she gives him biological implants, right? She's giving him, you know, human skin, you know, so he can feel his human skin. She turns on his emotion, you know, his emotion chip, and doesn't let him turn it off.
So as if, like, you can just make something look like something and it will be that.
Well, yes, but that's, Yeah, but it's exactly the opposite of a Borg, which is really a biological being that's been made into technology. Mm-hmm. So now we have technology that's being made into a biological.
So is this like a new level for her or something? Or is this like one of her, like, this is her being like, oh, I need a companion?
Well, she definitely seemed to need a companion, which is interesting. But then if you were a queen bee or a queen ant, you need a companion. Well, mostly. Actually, shouldn't say always, because apparently there are ants, I found out today, that some ants reproduce asexually.
Oh.
Yes. Which means that you have species of ants which are all female. So think about that.
Wow.
Yes.
Sounds like, how do I join?
Yeah,
that's what Roxanne's just coming up.
But you know what's really interesting? Like, I have my mom had lots of kids, so I'm like the last of six. So there's four girls and two boys, and I always got along better with the boys than I did with the girls. So I don't know if I would survive in an all female culture.
An all female colony.
I think there needs to be some balance. You know?
Yeah, you have to say you would be there going, there has to be a queen,
and I made bitches.
Yeah. So, she needs a mate.
And it's really interesting how, like, in the when the Borg is first introduced, there's no, like, you don't see that. There's like, you don't get a sense that there's like some higher, you know, being or whatever. You don't think about that, or there's no queen or anything. And then, like, with the movie, then she's introduced. Right.
Yeah.
She works because if the Borg Empire is so broad, it makes sense that you wouldn't see the inner workings from the edge.
Yeah. And then I guess they said, like, just tech from a behind the scenes point of view, then it's sort of, you know, like dramatically necessary, or, you know, it's just like you just keep, I guess, if you introduce a character, you just build on it. Right. So I guess if you think of the Borg as,
I guess, it's like if you're a peasant in during World War II who has no access to media whatsoever, no newspapers, no nothing, and suddenly Russian soldiers turn up on your doorstep and you're like, oh, wow, Russian soldiers. Doesn't mean you know Stalin.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. But also, if you cut open a hive, you know, you wouldn't, you know, you'd have to work pretty hard to identify the queen, right? Because the activity, right? There's all this activity that's in some way organized around the queen, right? Because it's the entire hive is basically organized around the queen and the queen's activity of reproduction, but she's, you know, she's just one bee among all the other bees. She looks different and so forth, and she's kind of controlling everything, but, you know, she's not easy to find.
See, the thing is that I've always been intrigued with, that we didn't really find out that much in this movie, or we don't know yet so far. I guess in the Picard thing we get to know more about that, but like her origin story, like the Borg origin story, like, and there's a few theories about that too, like canon and non-canon. It didn't really discuss that much, but
right.
I guess it just introduced her as a character.
Right.
Is it from the very first Star Trek movie with Voyager or V'ger? That is the beginnings of the Borg.
Oh, you mean like the first series of movies?
Yeah.
That's what I read. I just read it somewhere.
Yeah. And that to me seems a bit implausible. But
you know, the other thing that I was reading about is the theory that when the Borg assimilate the when they meet the Federation and when they assimilate, like, you know, Picard, that, like, their encounter with the Federation changes the collective. Like, because presumably that's how, like, they adapt, right? And that's, like, that's why they assimilate all of these civilizations. And I don't know, I have to go back and look at this, but I was just watching this video. And the person said, oh, you know, go back and look. They said in, like, one of the first times when the Borg, when they met the Borg, that they absorb or they assimilate civilizations. They don't assimilate individuals. Mm. But then suddenly this Federation ship just appeared in the Delta Quadrant, just all of a sudden.
Right.
And then, like, you know, okay, because Q, right? And then it just disappeared. So the theory was that, okay, like, the Borg were intrigued at what kind of technologies this ship have, you know, that, like, makes them just suddenly, like, do that, right? This was, like, a theory, right? I thought that was kind of, like, an interesting...
Yeah, that's clever.
...thing.
Yeah, that's clever.
But so, yeah, like, I'm really, like, I've always been intrigued, like, what is the origin story of the Queen and the Borg and that, like...
Well, she criticizes Data and says, and she says about him that, you know, well, you're an imperfect being, you know, made by an imperfect being, which is really interesting, right? So he kind of brags about himself. He says, you know, dealing with me is not like dealing with them. And she says, you're just an imperfect being that was created by, you know, a flawed being created by a flawed being.
Yeah.
And which makes you wonder about her. I mean, what, you know, how did she get created as this kind of strange? Because when she's finally, when she dies, right, she's, you know, she's mechanical.
And right? She says, I am the Borg. And then, you know, he's like, but wait a minute, how can you be the Borg? But, you know, and then she's like, I am the collective, you know, I'm the beginning, I am the end, I'm the one who's many, right?
Right. Right. Right, and she's the only one who says I.
Yes.
Right? She's right. Yeah. She's the I. Right? Everybody else is we. We are the Borg, but she is, but she's the only I.
Here's the other thing is with the inclusion of Voyager, which we haven't gone into, is the possibility that there's more than one queen.
Oh. I get well, that would work with bees. Mm.
Yeah.
Well, and right. if she is because
apparently there's three queens.
If she's a mechanical device, if she's like, if you imagine, like, you know, like a super server or whatever, to use that metaphor, you know, like, then there can be more than one, you know, super hub or super brain of, you know, whatever, right? If you imagine this is sort of like an AI, and you imagine there's, like, you know, like a, you know, like a hub, and then there's, like, you know, whatever, well, there can be multiple nodes, right? Presumably,
right. And the information she carried, you know, isn't necessarily in that head which she smashed, but could be anywhere.
Exactly, because she was connected to something, right? So still, we don't even know. Like, it's sort of a mystery, but then it's kind of like the mystery of, like, what is the origin of, maybe that's kind of like the same question, right? Like, where do we come from, or where is the...
I think the head smashing scene was like a little bit of an homage to the Terminator.
Yeah.
I think that
yes, it did,
like,
look very Terminator-like. Like, when you looked at it, it was
pretty, I felt like that was a little Terminator action there.
I'm reading. This is kind of interesting. It was a lot easier for viewers to focus on a villain rather than a hive mind that made decisions based on the input of all its members. So that's where I'm.
Yeah, that, I think that's true. But I think it's also true. That hive. So I was thinking about this. Now I'm sorry to get back into politics. No, I know we kind of slide in there too easily, but, like, these kind of mass movements, let's call them hive movements for the moment.
Yes.
Okay. So they appear to be popular movements, right? You know, and they kind of sell themselves as being decentralized, right? And, you know, we want, you know, this is, you know, popular movement. This is the people. This is the, but there's always a mastermind behind it, right? Mm-hmm. There's always somebody who's running the show.
Well, there has to be an origin point,
right?
It has to be somewhere. Like a singularity or something, whatever you call it. Is that what you call a singularity? The origin,
right?
The beginning,
you know. Point? But when you look at these like political movements, right, this is the spontaneous uprising, the burbling up of, you know, of feelings of pride in our country, at resentment.
But even if you use the metaphor of burbling up, so, you know, like the boiling up, if you think of like, you know, like a volcanic thing or something, there's still like a singular event. Like a tiny little micro event.
Right. There's something happening.
One thing that happens to make the next thing happen. Because like if you think of like it as a cascade, so there still is a thing that causes another thing.
I've got a horrible example. Lee's gonna hate this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we go back to the 1920s, and we have an Austrian corporal who's spying on political organizations for the German government, and he's sent to this meeting of this political organization. He sits in, and then he realizes, hey, I'm on the wrong team.
Mm-hmm.
And so he joins, you know, and and that corporal's name is Adolf.
Wow.
You know, and that's how it starts.
Wow. And there again, also, like, I mean, it's
that's
very
like
much
a really banal beginning for something so spectacularly awful.
Yes.
And horrible.
Yes.
That ended. Yeah, but... and that actually is, if you will indulge me, that actually, technically speaking, is still ongoing. If you want to be really like, yeah, like I argue, yeah, sure, that, you know, because the like that regime fell, but that like the, you know, there were, if we go back to our Borg, some Borg still survived and could, there was enough, you know, that there could still be like some regenerating thing happening, yeah, right? So like, you know, the Nazi, whatever, they get scattered and they could, you know, gather, you know, whatever, right? Like, so like, it's really like, it's a banal continuation, and it's like a really banal beginning, what he described. And then there's like some like,
well, the thing is, if we look at history, has that kind of behavior happened before? And the answer is yes. And the answer is actually partially in the Bible. And there was a civilization that was so monolithic in its violence and militarism, that it got completely wiped off the earth.
Right.
Which is the Assyrians.
Right.
Who built those great temples in Iraq
great
and Syria.
Right.
Yeah. And they sacked Babylon. They sacked all the cities around. And when they sacked Babylon, they put every single being to death.
Hmm.
You know, they weren't interested in conquering the city. They were interested in obliterating the city.
Did they want to take anything, like any technology, or did they just want to destroy everything?
They wanted to conquer to the point of annihilation.
That's even beyond the Borg, because the Borg have the purpose, the reason that the Borg destroy is to take your technology. Like, they don't actually care. Like, they're not like Hamas Nazis. They don't actually like want to destroy anything. Like, that's not their main purpose, is to destroy. But they don't care. They don't want to save you either. It's how this was described in this thing that I watched was like, they have an their algorithm is programmed to like just, you know, conquer technology and take the technology and like, you know, and at some point they decide that like taking humans, like, cause at first they didn't take individuals, but then they decide when they get to the Federation to take individuals, because then they somehow, I don't know. It's reasoned that, you know, they figure that that's a way to increase their ability to adapt and to increase the reach of technology. But yeah, like,
but how they fell is interesting, because there's a parallel to World War II. They fell the same way. They made so many enemies that all the enemies joined up and turned against them.
Well, because if you have such a destructive force, then you become everyone's enemy. Like everyone in the Alpha Quadrant, in the Beta Quadrant, in the whatever, like every quadrant of the universe, like they had no allies. They didn't care. Like, you know, they didn't have any, like, any ethics or any, like, they just were conquering. But then, like, you never see, like, I guess you're so engaged in the antagonism of it and the drama of the war that you never stop to think who's causing that, you know? Like, it just now, like, seeing the queen and thinking about that, like, it just makes me think, you know, in the times before, like, early when I would, you know, watch, because Borg was one of my favorite things. Like, it never occurred to me, like, who's causing this? Like, because you just get so caught up in the, you know?
Well, because you don't need much more than a slogan.
Yeah.
I mean, at the level of the foot soldier, all you need is the slogans, right? All they need to know is that resistance is futile, and we will assimilate your biological. You know, we will assimilate your biological and technological diversity, right? Distinctiveness. I think that's the word. Distinctiveness to the collective, right? And that's all they need to know, right? It comes down to a very simple mission statement, and they're just fulfilling the very simple mission statement. Built into that, though, is some pretty big ideas, like, for example, that distinctiveness is not a value, which is exactly the opposite, you know, exactly the opposite of how, you know, we normally think, right? We normally think of distinctiveness. Well, not necessarily. We're torn, right?
Yeah.
We think distinctiveness is great, but then at the same time, we want to wear uniforms and we want to march in rows and we want to do various things that make us seem like we're not distinct. But that there's a motivating force behind that, and that there's an ideology behind that.
Yeah, I think because distinctiveness is important to us because we want to distinguish ourselves from each other. But then distinctiveness is scary because we don't want to be the only one. The Borgs don't care about that. But yet
except for one Borg.
Yeah. But then that's really interesting that they use that. Your biological and technological distinctiveness. Like they use that terminology, like.
Right.
So.
Well, I think that's also why they assimilate. I think that part of the idea of kind of assimilating individuals in the Federation was because once you did that, you now had kind of Federation thinking now built into the DNA of the Borg.
Yeah.
Right.
But then like that, how does that, like I asked before, like, does assimilating individuals, like, does individuality get, like, if you assimilate lots of individuals, like, does that eventually somehow make it into the, like,
No, because they found a way to get rid of it.
Because there's somebody controlling it, and we don't know that. But if it wasn't being, so that's why, because it's actually, they're just drones and they're being programmed by some higher.
And when here's
a question about assimilation.
Right.
Do you think incorporating Hong Kong has changed China?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it clearly has.
Yeah.
I think it clearly has.
But the change is not as much as you would think. It's filtered.
Right. That's true. Mm.
It's diffused. That's true. Yeah.
It has, but not as much as you would think. Yeah. Right. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. I'm trying to think now if I can think of other examples of that. Russia and the Crimea, but I'm not going to get into that one.
No. That doesn't work, really.
Well, I don't know. I'll go with it. I've said, I don't know if I've said in this podcast, but this is something I borrowed from Norman Spector, who is a Canadian important person who did lots of important political things. And he said about Canada's two-state solution is Quebec and the rest of Canada. And so the distinct society and stuff, right? But it's kind of like true. I mean, like they are distinct, like, you know, and as annoying, yeah. I'm from the prairies, as I've said. So, it's almost like diametrically, like, but I come from a Francophone community. So that's a bit complicated, but it's like, there is a distinction. They aren't like everyone else.
As an outsider,
yeah,
who's lived in Quebec, I would say all the provinces are distinct.
But I see Quebec as being a little bit different. I just remember working for the federal government and, you know, sitting on like conference calls with all of the provinces, and we would be talking about, you know, a thing, and everybody would be like, oh, sure, okay. And Quebec would be like, no.
But Louisiana is distinct from the rest of the states, but do they have a distinct...
No, but I even think that's even different because like Quebec is like, no, we are not. We don't want to be like, they are like the least part of the federation that they could, or the confederation that they could possibly be without leaving. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's distinctively like, and that's different from Alberta, which is like, I don't know. I just see them as like being different because of the Francophone thing and like the signage thing. They freak out if you have English on your signs, and they're convinced that like, if you have English anywhere, like French will be destroyed instead. They're a bit, you know, they're French. Okay. Like they're like, but like, that's distinct. You know what? That, even though that's over there in that concentrated in that one province, that somehow seeps into the rest of the country, but like very subtly, you know, I don't know. Like
as an American, I will definitely, I studied in Quebec City for a summer and spent some time in Quebec, and have been various places in Canada, and it's very different. I mean, it feels like a different country in many respects. I mean, the language, just, I was there on Quebec Day or whatever it's called.
Oh yeah, and
it was like a whole thing, you know. Totally. And it was really intense. And even though, you know, the referendum didn't pass, you know, back in the day. I feel like you're right. I think it is like a two-state solution.
And
it's a pretty successful one.
It is. You know? Like, I appreciate them, like, because they, for like a lot of like the rest of Canada has like gotten swept into the whole progressive thing, right? Like really like this, like being removed from reality, just really like silly shit. Right. And Quebec has been kind of like, okay, no, we're not doing that. And so like, you know, there's like French CBC and then there's like other CBC. And so like French CBC has managed to maintain some like journalistic, you know, chops, where the rest of the CBC is just like, I don't know what they're doing, right? So like, there is something there to be said. And but it's funny because then they just flex their muscle a little bit and they're like, okay, yeah, hey, we're here, and they just do a little bit of like a, excuse my French, they just do a little bit of a fuck you, no, we're not playing. And it's sort of like, you know, it sort of like affects the rest of us. And it, I don't know, it's kind of like a cool, like it's a cool like vibe, like that works for Canadians. I don't know.
Well, also choosing to do that, right? Choosing to do that, to have a kind of two-state solution, so to speak, get myself in trouble.
Please don't do this at all.
Please. please. Just don't quote me on any of this. Whenever I use the word phrase two-state solution, do not include that in any recording. I know everybody.
Two-state solution is from Dr. Norman Spector. So yeah, everyone, just so you know that.
But if you, the very fact that you choose a two-state solution already is going to change your DNA, right? It's going to change your DNA. It's going to change, who you are. It's going to make you from, oh my God, this sounds horrible. Like it'll make you from, a smoothie into a salad, I don't know where that analogy came from. I should be shot for my metaphors.
Well, it is the home of poutine.
Yes.
It is the home of poutine.
So
what can you say, right?
Yeah.
But that's go ahead.
I was once in Scotland and
weird food.
Yeah. I went to a fish and chip shop in Scotland and they sold chips, which is French fries, with gravy. And they sold chips with cheese on top. So I said, could I have the gravy on top of the cheese with the chips? Kind of a quasi poutine. And they were horrified. They did not want to do it.
That's funny.
So I had to debate with them for like 15 minutes to do this, to pour the gravy on top of the cheese on the chips.
This is way off topic, but anyway, whatever, we wander.
Anyway.
The home of haggis had a problem with chips with cheese curds and gravy. Is that what you're telling me? The home of haggis had a problem with poutine?
Yes.
Amazing.
Really?
Amazing.
All right, then.
They felt putting gravy on top of the cheese, on top of the chips.
Yes.
Gross, even though they sold it them separate.
Yes. Yeah. Well, some people...
Maybe on the flesh, and I should have asked for cheese on top of the chips and then a slide of gravy.
That may have worked, yes.
Yeah.
And not, and then just went off and just made your own little and not got in anyone like, traumatized with your food. Looked around,
see if anyone was looking at me and bought the gravy up.
Oh my God, put this guy in jail. He just mixed his gravy and his cheese.
The Borg don't eat, right? They just...
Yeah. They just regenerate.
Well, that's why they go into those replenishing...
Right,
So capsules, the queen... in the movie, Picard... Okay, I'm talking about first contact now. Let's go back to the queen because that's what we were talking about. Like, we don't actually ever really find out. Like, okay, she's some kind of electronic thing or whatever.
But she wants to have sex.
She's a horny electronic thing.
Because she says,
so's Data actually.
Yeah, she
wants to have sex.
There's an episode where he has sex.
Yes, and he agreed, and he said, she said, have you had physical pleasure? And he says, I'm fully functional and programmed for, many positions, sort of like that, for many techniques, and then they get interrupted. But, she seems to be, seducing Data.
She's an individual.
Not sure how that works.
Yeah, like
maybe it doesn't. When we look at the animal world, there are pairings which don't make any sense because they can't breed.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I still don't understand, I guess I'm not going to get it until I keep watching, but I don't know where she came from.
Yes.
And you're not supposed to know.
Well, the thing is, if we knew where she came from, they wouldn't be able to continue having Borg episodes.
I guess so.
Yes,
this is true.
Because part of the intrigue about the Borg is the mystery,
right? Yeah, we don't know. We don't know exactly where they came. We don't know exactly where they came from.
Yeah.
Somebody had to make those nanobots, right? Some intelligence.
So she is an expression of the collective's intelligence, not a controller, but an avatar of the collective as an individual.
She's so different from the collective. That's the weird part.
So she is not like the master mind, you know, looking above, controlling all these little minions. This is what I'm reading in the Wikipedia.
Really?
I'm reading that she is the avatar of the collective, of the amassed intelligence of the collective. Maybe that's semantics. I don't know, but
I think it's, I think it's semantics, but was Adolf Hitler like the mastermind behind the Nazi hive, or
he's the symbol of it,
or the symbol and embodiment? He was both, actually, right? He was really both. Right? I mean, he starts out as the mastermind, and he becomes the symbol.
He was the inspiration. I think there was, like, you know, other people could arguably be seen as, like, the actual technical
right,
mastermind.
Maybe the actual, right,
you know,
actual,
like,
right.
The engineers right. of, and maybe there were, like, a few masterminds, but yeah, like, but he is the overseer, but then he is also the embodiment, but we... In retrospect, make him the embodiment for, you know?
I don't know. Or you could say maybe the queen is to the Borg what Donald Trump is to make America great again.
Maybe. But then there's the other thing. Maybe she's like the Führer, because in that whole National Socialism world, the Führer is the highest. Like, right. And it's the whim of the Führer, right? There is not really anything to National Socialism except whatever the Führer says and wants and values. So I don't know if this is this. I think this is the just a little bit different, because I don't know, like, she is not the one person making all the decisions. She is one person that is like the hub of all the information, and she's like the singular expression of a collective intelligence.
Right. And while they're just operating on the algorithm, right? They're sort of algorithm driven. She seems to be driven by a kind of intelligence.
Yeah.
Right. Because you're not seeing.
So if she's like a hub that they are feeding into, would that be accurate?
Maybe. I mean, listen, the brain, you know, if you think of her as a brain,
yeah.
Right, the brain is simultaneously, you know, sending out messages to the, you know, to the nervous system and the nerves, the muscles and so forth. And at the same time, also receiving information, right? And also is neuroplasticity. It's also changing because of the information
it's like
receiving.
Managing, you know, necessary like functions for like, you know, life support and like, you know, so right. That things don't go into chaos, right? Because right. When she is compromised, I don't know that I think this was like when she is infected with something, or if her integrity is compromised, then there is chaos instilled into the collective, and the collective suffers, right?
Right.
No, right. Yes, you're frowning, Mr. What's wrong with you? You're frowning.
Trying to wake up. I need my second coffee here.
Sleeping.
Oh, yeah.
That's not frowning. That's
fading. I'm fading.
That's called fading.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's weird that if she's so dangerous. I mean, if she's such a vital part of the collective, that she would put herself in danger. You know, with this little escapade of trying to find a mate and all this stuff.
So maybe it seems like goes into the thing where there actually may be more than one queen.
Right. Could be. Right. Yeah. It could very well be. Could well be. Which means that it's not over yet.
Well, and then I'm reading ahead. This was not in the movie, but Then there's a thing where she is from an alternate. There's another, like an alternate. There's a Borg queen from an alternate timeline or something. And she was convinced to create the collective. I don't know what that's all about.
Maybe I don't know where they got that one from.
Picard. Okay. That's in front. We haven't watched the Picard things yet. But
yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
But
oh, is that from the from further on?
Yes,
in
the Picard okay. show, which we haven't watched yet.
Yes. Oh, I'm trying to think if I've watched it. I think I have watched
We've
it.
We've watched a few episodes.
I don't remember.
I don't remember. I have to watch it again.
Yeah, I don't remember yeah. either.
So
yeah, we watched the first season and then...
I forgot already. That was a long time
ago. And then I got busy and then the third season came out and I was like, the first season sounds so good. But I have to watch the second season.
So the thing about when you become a Borg, and even if you're liberated, like you always have some Borg in you.
Yes.
So when the movie begins, like Picard is still like dealing with his, like having his encounter with the Borg.
Right. He's still traumatized. And he's also experiencing the voices, and he knows they're nearby. Yeah.
And they're worried.
So you never separate from the hive. Ever.
It's like you can check out any time, but you can never leave. Welcome to yeah. Hotel California.
One of the worst songs ever, but yes.
And you know what he said? Don Henley said that everyone has all these really wacky ideas about what this song is, and they have like some really yeah. whack shit. And he said, I watched the Eagles documentary, and he said, it's basically just really simple. It's not any more simple than this. It's simply, once you discover something, or once you know a thing, once you learn a thing or think a thing, like you can't unthink it or unknow it. Like you cannot take knowledge away, or you cannot like unknow that thing. Like you, once you walk into the knowledge of something, and said, that's it. That's basically the meaning of the song. Everyone else, it all is weird stuff about the beast and all, but it's not blah, 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 blah. And he said, that's what it is about.
Okay, so you can check out, but you can never leave. You know, but it's true. It's like people who have been members of cults yeah. and things like that, right? But, you know, like you can leave.
If you've been a member of a religious group, like, you know, I was raised a Catholic. My mom raised me, you know, whatever, right? And even though, like, you know, I decided to stop practicing, like that, like there's still some of it. Like you can leave, you know, you can take the girl out of the Catholic, but can you take the Catholic out of the girl? I mean, not to a degree, right? That's like a thing that's in you, like it's instilled in you. It's kind of like some of your you know, your implants couldn't be taken away without
those things are part of who you are. They're part of, you know, what shaped you. You never can completely leave the collective.
Yeah. And you so that's scary. Yeah, that's kind of like really like
I'm a little freaked out now.
And then, so but in that case, like, then he doesn't even know, because, like, what that does he even know, like, what shit was put in him? Like, I guess and how it grows, because, like, we're not, this isn't even covered, I don't think, yet. Is it? That, like, he is forever altered. Like, right?
Well, yes. And it's also, it gets more complicated, because he says to her, now I remember that I had to join the collective willingly, right? That her condition on him before was that she wanted him to be her mate. Mm. She wanted Picard to be her mate. And so he's like a very special case, right? He's the Borg with the name. He was also an I. Right? Says he, you know, I am, you know, or I am Locutus of Borg, right? I am Locutus of Borg. I'm the speaker. So his case is especially strange, and he doesn't completely realize, because only when he's talking to her does he suddenly remember, like, oh, you know, you were trying to persuade me into accepting this on myself. And then when she rejects him in favor of Data, Data, you know, says, oh, he'll make a great drone, you know. But at that time, I think, you know, Data is faking it.
Yeah. But see, then this, so she selected him?
Yes.
So he's like, is he like...
He's Picard. I mean, of course she did.
Is he like the chosen one or something? Is this like a chosen one thing? Is this like, but it's not a really a messiah thing, because what is his purpose of being chosen? Just to be her
consort.
Okay.
Yeah. Or, but maybe that's kind of like part of it is, you know, to be the only one, right? I mean, she has to suffer being the only one in the collective, right? That's a suffering, right? The whole collective is built on this idea that it's great to be part of a collective, right? Remember, old Hugh, you know, got lonely because, you know, he couldn't feel the voices in his head. And she has to be a one, right?
Well, I don't, like, and, I guess I'm like, why?
Well, I'm not sure why exactly. I'm not sure
that's
what
like, about
kind of
like saying God is lonely.
Well,
I don't know.
No, but I mean there are a lot of religious systems that are built on the idea that God, you know, of God in pair, right? You have, you know, Marduk and Ishtar, and you have the, you know, the Hindu gods and their consorts, you know, the idea that God is male and female because to be alone is not good, is, you know, pretty common. So maybe that's kind of what it is. She's the goddess looking for her god.
This reminds me of, this is really off topic, but just walked into my head. So I don't know if either of you remember Anne Rice. Anne Rice.
Oh, like the
Vampire books? Anne Rice?
Yes.
Have you read any? I don't imagine you read any of her books.
No.
Okay. Robert, have you read? Did you read Queen of the Damned? Do you remember Queen of the Damned?
Yeah.
It's the one that talks about the origin story of vampires. No. Is it? Yeah, I think it mentions, anyway, there's a part in there where they use the origin story of vampires. Yes, I think it's Queen of the Damned, because she wakes up. Mm-hmm. And so it's basically like some ancient, like, royal couple from ancient Egypt. And, like, they are, like, very, like, old, so, like, old, and they're, like, stationary, and they've just gone dormant. And so this reminds me of that, because like they're like a male and a female, but she's the powerful one, but he's like the consort. Do you remember that? So I don't know. This just reminds me of that. And they were like the origin of like the, you know, the all vampires like originated from them. They were like the mother and the father of like the whole of the vampire, everything. So I don't know if this was like her, you know, envisioning that, like this would be like, you know, her and her like consort, and they would rule over their drone empire.
I think she was also supposed to remind us of Medusa.
Yes, you know, I was thinking that when I was watching her, she just had a Medusa like head.
Yeah.
So like she's supposed to be horrifying and not beautiful. She's supposed to terrify you. And Medusa
didn't work.
Well, the thing with Medusa is like it didn't. Well, maybe I don't know what that says about you, dude. But but maybe like you're supposed to be horrified by her, you know, because that's part of that, right? Like, I don't know.
Right, but Medusa was also, I mean, horrified, yeah. but it was also horrified. She had originally been so beautiful, yes. you know? So there was kind of like, the reason why men kind of went to, you know, even to slay her was, you know, to kind of see what had become of her, to see her. And I mean, and she was doomed to loneliness. I mean, that was the,
yeah,
that
the
was
turning, the, that yeah, was the thing, like, the turning
to loneliness.
And, you know, if you looked at her, you would turn to stone and things like that, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and she was, you know, and so therefore she was always going to be, and that was the point of the punishment, was that she would be forever alone. And that's, you know, that seems to be the situation of our poor Borg queen.
But I'm still curious because I always was like, I was always that kid. I just still, like, I'm curious about where she came from. Like, who would just make one entity and say, like, here, you have to be alone and you have to... You know, I don't know. Like, run it just, yeah, show. Like, it's like, ooh,
or you have to be the kind of the center of the hive mind. And yeah, I don't know.
But one thing that's fascinating about her, she's kind of she's kind of seductive in a way, because of her soothing voice or whatever. And like her stilling of chaos, like she's yes. whatever, but she is horrifying.
Yes.
Like, she's horrifying absolutely and horrifying. She's, like, and powerful.
That's how we Americans feel about Canadians.
We feel that about ourselves, too.
Very polite.
Yeah. We're.
I think Americans are scared that we'll actually assimilate them.
Yes. No, we're terrified. Yes. Yeah. We're terrified that you might assimilate. That's why we send our brain worms.
Yeah. And that's why we send our... people like Jim Carrey down there.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And Jim Shatner. Yeah.
You guys are mopping up on the entertainment industry.
That's right.
There are a lot of Canadians.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, listen, it's getting late and I'm fading also.
Yeah, I think we've kind of talked about it, but it's fascinating because she's so like horrifying and mysterious. And like, I guess that's where her power comes from, because if you have like a ruling, a monarch, they can't be too familiar. You can't like know everything about them. I mean, when you think about like the late queen, that was like part of her jive, right? That she was like distant and not familiar, and that you couldn't touch her and know too much about her. And she was like, like elevated, like a deity or something.
Right.
Seems to have that same kind of vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, she does. And she's so different from the rest of the collective. I mean, everybody else is so macho and, you know, even if they were females, I guess, and they were, you know, they behave kind of, they just kind of march around and, you know, do drone things. But she is clearly female and clearly, you know, she's the only person that's like really gendered.
And the other thing is that she doesn't realize Data's deceived her.
Yes.
Like, that's intriguing. Like, that's something we didn't really talk about, but like that, like, what is like, what, like, that's interesting that she didn't know.
That's what
know that
love will do to you. That's what love will do to you.
You always have the most clever thing to say.
Love will blind you.
It sure will, you know? Man.
She got blinded, you know? It's like she was just...
But even her, she's so powerful and she has access to so much intelligence. And he fooled her.
Yeah, but does she... I mean, it's hard to find somebody who's your equal. I mean, she found Picard. He was pretty good. But this is like, you know, positronic brain. And she's like gushing and she's like, wow, this is going to be great. And, you know how that is, you know, when you think something's going to be great, you overlook certain things like the fact that they're deceiving you.
Well, because that's often an emotional reaction. Like, you often are like enthralled with like the word enthralled, like thrall is like a spell, right? So like your logical part of your brain is necessarily disengaged when you're under a thrall. I'm humanizing her now, but I mean, maybe that's how her circuitry works too. I don't know.
I think she was under a thrall. You know, she looked pretty enthralled to me.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to go for that.
But yeah, like, it's just...
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess we've pretty much...
Okay.
About it.
Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate sharing your living room there.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, you guys are in two separate places in the same house?
He's in the... Oh, we sound really fancy. We're not. He's in the studio.
The studio.
As you can see, it's a sound studio.
I see.
Like,
it looks like a studio.
I'm in the messy living room.
Okay.
So, next week we'll talk about for real, for whole Spaceman.
Okay, yeah. Good. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. I may watch it
again. Yeah, I'm going to watch it again too.
Yeah.
I feel like I should watch it again just to pick up on some things I didn't see.
Yeah. I'm going to watch it again.
Well, I think it's one of those films when you watch it the second time, it's going to be more of a revelation because the beginning is going to fit in better.
I also have the feeling that the voice of the spider was Adam Sandler.
It isn't.
Okay. I had the feeling like the voice was some sort of like modified version of his own voice. It sounded like him when he was making promises. He would kind of get low and okay. So it wasn't him.
No.
Okay.
But yeah,
that's all.
That's the kind of movie you watch a few times and you...
Paul Dano.
And also, by the way, very weird, like Adam Sandler in that kind of a role.
That was
kind of threw me for a loop at first.
He did well, though. But I think it's the kind of movie that you watch a few times because there's so many things to it.
Yeah, there's a bunch of... Yeah, there's a lot of little things in there.
Deep.
Especially in the kind of little nuances of their relationship also. There's like lots of little pieces in there.
Yeah. And like one thing I noticed was that when I read some reviews, some people didn't really like the way that their story was told. They found it really like Spartan and like, you know, flashy, like flashes and not like a narrative. But like, I feel like that's like, I felt like that was a great way to tell the story because that's sort of how like you live it. You know, I don't know.
That's how you remember it. Right? I mean, you remember relationships in
fragments
in that. Right. In sort of fragment little snapshots, but you know, those, you know, 3 second movies, you know. You remember the conversation or half of the conversation, your half of the conversation, their half of the conversation. You know,
you always meet people who can't watch films that have non-linear storylines.
Yeah, like I think a lot of people don't
like Pulp Fiction
don't like to have to think. Like when he's remembering things and they're describing and they show you the scenes of her, you know, and they're showing you the scenes of her having the, you know, going through the thing with having the first pregnancy and stuff like that. And, you know, they just show you flash and they just show you enough, something really intense for you to know what it is. But like, you know, nobody's going to like write you an essay over it. Like you just have to, you know, I don't know. I think it's just a certain way of engaging with stuff that somehow everyone likes.
Yeah, yeah. Some people really need a linear story.
Yeah.
I understand.
But anyway, we'll talk about it next week.
So next week, and so I'll rewatch it this week. And we'll talk about that.
Yeah. Okay.
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 So peace out.
See you guys.
Bye.